Yeah, we're going to chant the one that has the purport. Fantastic. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Tavatmasanam Arupya. Bahubhyam Parirabhyacha. Yashoda cha Mahabhaga Sutta Vidhatu Shuchaha Tab Atmasanam Arupya Bahubhyam Parirabhyacha Yashoda cha Mahabhaga Sutta Vijahato Shucha. Tav Atmasanam Arupya. Rabya. Bahubhyam Parirabhyacha. Yashoda cha Mahabhaga. Tavatmasanam Arupya. Sutau Vidhato Chacha. Bahubhyam Parirabhyacha Yashoda cha Mahabhaga Sutta Vijahato Shucha. Ladies? Tavatmasanam Arupya Bahubhyam Parirabhyacha Yashoda cha Mahabhaga Sutta Vijahato Shucha Tavatmasanam Arupya Bahubhyam Parirabhyacha Yashoda cha Mahabhaga Sutta Vijahato Shucha. Tau, the two of them. Atma Asanam on their laps. Arupya, raising. Bahubhyam with their arms. Parirabhya, embracing. Cha, and Yashoda, Mother Yashoda. Cha, also. Mahabhaga, saintly. Sutau, their sons. Vijahato, they gave up. Shuchaha, their sorrow. I'm going to go back this translation at the end. We'll go back to 31. Translation for 31. Sutta Goswami said, when Nanda Maharaj learned that the Yadus had arrived, led by Krishna, he immediately went to see them. The cowherds accompanied him their various possessions loaded on their wagons. Purport. The cowherds of Vraja were planning to stay at Kurukshetra for some days, so they came equipped with adequate provisions, especially milk products and other foods for the pleasure of Krishna and Balaram. Text 32. Seeing Nanda, the Vrishnis were delighted and stood up, like dead bodies coming back to life, having felt much distress at not seeing him for so long. They held him in a tight embrace. Text 33. Vasudev embraced Nanda Maharaj with great joy. Beside himself with ecstatic love, Vasudev remembered the troubles Kamsa had caused him, forcing him to leave his sons in Gokula for their safety. Text 34. O hero of the Kurus, Krishna and Balaram embraced their foster parents and bowed down to them. But their throats were so choked up with tears of love that the two lords could say nothing. Purport. After a long separation, a respectful child should first offer obeisances to his parents. Nanda and Yashoda gave their sons no opportunity for this. However, as soon as they saw them, they embraced them. Only then could Krishna and Balaram offer their proper respects. Text 35. That's the one that we just chanted. Raising their two sons onto their laps and holding them in their arms, Nanda and saintly Mother Yashoda forgot their sorrow. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti explains that after the initial embraces and obeisances, Vasudev led Nanda and Yashoda into his tent as they held the hands of Krishna and Balaram. Following them inside were Rohini, other women, and men of Vraja, and a number of attendants. Inside, that's inside Vasudev's tent, Nanda and Yashoda took the two boys on their laps, despite having heard the glories of the two lords of Dwaraka, and despite seeing these opulences now before their eyes. Nanda and Yashoda looked upon them as if they were still their 8-year-old children. So there's several nice points I wanted to highlight from this little section. Outstanding and overriding the whole of this exchange, along with the whole of the 10th canto for that matter, the rule of spiritual emotion is very, very prominent. It's just exchanges of love wherever Krishna goes. And there's varieties of that love that are being displayed. So that's kind of the overarching theme. So then take that theme and look more closely at what we're hearing Shukadeva Goswami describe. What a scene. That the residents of Vrindavan are being reunited with Krishna outside of Vrindavan, which is quite unique. our acharyas sometimes discuss, when Krishna left Vrindavan, taken on the chariot of Akura, they were feeling great separation, pain of separation from Krishna. So they asked the question, why didn't they just like go to Mathura and see Krishna? It's only a short distance away. Only a short distance away. But they didn't. At least there's no indication that they did. They could have, but they didn't. Because they're attached to Vrindavan, and not just like that's their home and they can't leave their home, they're attached to Vrindavan, the land of Krishna. And you know, another explanation is it's just part of Krishna's lila. So the devotees of Krishna are obedient to the will of Krishna. You know, why does a devotee do what a devotee does? Why did Arjuna become bewildered, or why did Maharaj Parikshit do what Maharaj Parikshit did, or why does any devotee do anything a devotee does? They follow the indication of Krishna. He's their Lord and Master, and Krishna's internal potency rules their lives, and they do according to Krishna's indication. However, that, you know, whatever receiver they have for the signal of Krishna's indication, they have it, and they follow Krishna's indication. So the indication was for the intensification of love through separation. Because here's an example where they didn't just go a short distance from Vrindavan to Mathura to see Krishna. They went all the way from Vrindavan to Kurukshetra to see Krishna, or you know, to take part in a festival on a special holy occasion, auspicious occasion. But again, just following the indication of Krishna, so that there's meeting. It's very, the lives of devotees, especially such exalted devotees as the residents of Vrindavan, are, just hold us in great, perhaps great awe or great appreciation, at least, of the extent of their love, how they're ruled by love. So we hear that Nanda Maharaj had arrived at Kurukshetra, and that the verse is saying that they had intended to stay several days, and so they came with adequate provisions, but they're, you know, especially the provisions were like for their own comfort. They're especially the provisions were for offering the same thing that they did during Krishna's childhood, their dairy products to Krishna. You know, extra special, who can imagine? Krishna liked to steal butter and yogurt, so they probably had lots of butter and yogurt extra for Krishna. Now he's not the cowherd boy of Vrindavan anymore. He's the prince of Dwarka with so many wives and great opulence, but you know, that's not how they see him. They see him as their darling son Krishna. Yashoda Dulal, the darling son of Krishna, or Yashoda and Nanda Dulal, darling son of Nanda Maharaj. That's how they see him. So what does one offer to Krishna? One offers to Krishna whatever one has, because their occupation, we have different occupations. We offer what we have. But their occupation was they were cowherds, so they offered what they had in love for Krishna. But it's not karma yoga. So they could get free from the bondage of reactions of their work. That's a preliminary stage, but in the mature stage, super mature stage, it's just ecstatic love. And you offer in ecstatic love what you have. In a regulative way, you offer what you have. In an ecstatic way, you offer what you have. With, in their case, we're just filled with inconceivable, unprecedented love that's out of this world. So then, Nanda Maharaj went to greet the Yadus, and then the next verse is the Yadus saw Nanda Maharaj. And seeing Nanda Maharaj, the comparison that we hear from time to time is presented here also, that they were like dead, and seeing Nanda, they came alive. So they certainly weren't morose or dead or something like that. But to the members of the Yadu dynasty, Nanda Maharaj was not just a friend. He was so special that just seeing him, it's as if life came again into the body of a dead person. Their affection, ruled by affection, they felt affection for Nanda Maharaj like they felt for Krishna, because he's so dear to Krishna. You see someone who is so dear to Krishna, and it's like seeing Krishna. And it's, you know, whatever fatigue or, I mean, even it happens in worldly things, just like this very, very simple example. Supposing, so many things, but supposing you've had a long day and, you know, at the end of the day you're fatigued. And suddenly, unexpectedly, here comes somebody that you haven't seen in a long time, a very dear friend that you, you know, you grew up in Krishna consciousness with, and suddenly you forget your fatigue, and you're just with them and enjoying, and time passes, and then it's, all of a sudden it's late, and you realize, whoa. The fatigue, or, you know, the effect, the wearing effect of being in the material world leaves one when there's transcendental enlivenment. Just works that way. You know, even if you're a regulated devotee, a regulative type of, still it, the impetus of enlivenment is there when there's contact with Krishna or someone dear to Krishna or some activity that's, Krishna is very prominent. So they, like a dead body coming to life again, they rose and ecstatically they embraced. And just reading this section, there's so many things that is like what, you know, when we experience something here, it's, this is like that, but that's the real thing, and this is the reflection of the real thing. You seeing somebody you haven't seen for a long time. The exchange of Krishna conscious affection is at the basis of all of what they're doing here. So they embraced Nanda Maharaj, they, the Vrishnis, presumably one by one, they embraced Nanda Maharaj very strongly in their arms. Then the next specifically focuses on Vasudeva. Vasudeva, he's Krishna's father, or like nobody has, Krishna doesn't have any father, but he, the pastime or the bhava was he is Krishna's father. And when he sees Nanda Maharaj, similarly, very, very strong embrace. One can only imagine the things leading up to that, his eyes and what his heart, and just strong embrace. And where is his mind going? The mention is Vasudeva remembered the troubles Kamsa had caused him, forcing him to leave his sons in Gokula for their safety. So he wasn't like feeling self-pity. That's not the, gee, how I got beat up by this circumstance of life. Rather, it's a little bit, I was reading this and thinking of our discussion yesterday of the hardships of the Pandavas or any devotee of course, according to the stage of spiritual elevation of that devotee, but the difficulty that a devotee encounters, these devotees, Vasudeva and the Pandavas and other exalted devotees, there's a transcendental lila of Krishna or purpose of Krishna behind the difficulty. And in this case, he, the Vasudeva, had great difficulty due to Kamsa, as we might have great difficulty due to something or someone. It's the nature of this world. There's difficulty and sometimes, you know, extreme calamity and so on, hardship, trouble. For a devotee, that serves as an impetus for deepening attachment to Krishna. So when on the platform of transcendental love, that's where his mind has gone to. You know, the difficulty, not like, you know, feeling sorry for himself, but the impetus for increasing ecstatic. Here he is embracing Nanda Maharaj, and what he did, even before Krishna appeared, with Baladev. Of course, the arrangement was made by Krishna himself for Baladev to be transferred to the womb of Rohini. But the intimacy between Vasudev and Nanda was, Vasudev had a number of queens, number of wives, and Rohini was one of those wives. So Rohini, when she became pregnant, for her safety, she was transferred to the care of Nanda while still pregnant. In other words, very close relationship. Very close relationship. And then Balaram was transferred from the womb of Devaki to Rohini and so forth. But the bond of love between Vasudeva and Devaki was very, very high, very strong. So seeing Nanda, naturally, he's ecstatic. And naturally, he's thinking of Krishna, because he knew very well. He did it. He carried Krishna from the prison house of Kamsa to be entrusted in the care of Nanda and Yashoda, under Krishna's indication to do so. So he's, you know, the bond of affection, again, seeing Nanda, he's thinking of all these things. I'm not a parent, but I can only imagine, you know, that a parent, the very night the child is born, separated from mother and father, willfully, when you're a transcendental affection capacity person, and take the son and he's placed somewhere else, what does that do to the mother and father? So seeing Nanda, he's remembering those things. Then there's, you know, the harassment of Kamsa, you know, the Kamsa like challenges that we may meet in life. You know, little Kamsas, tiny Kamsas compared to Kamsa. But then, you know, the trouble that's caused and the decisions that we need to take in order to address the Kamsa-like circumstances, it's our attention, let our attention go to Krishna and Krishna's protection, Krishna's shelter in all of those circumstances. But because, at least for devotees, behind the circumstance, there's Krishna, and circumstances are, to the degree that we're Krishna conscious, they're being conducted by the agency of Krishna's special potency to help his devotee, help us, or whoever we're interacting with as friends or companions or something, to come closer to exclusive shelter in Krishna. Sometimes it's not easy to see that, but that's, we should understand that's what's behind the whole thing. And sure enough, that's where Vasudeva's attention goes. The feeling of separation from Krishna, by just by seeing Nanda Maharaj. And that, you know, not so much the tribulation per se, but due to the tribulation, separation from Krishna. Then Shukadeva Goswami describes this situation where Krishna and Balaram see Nanda and Yashoda. And a little detail is what they first do, well, it's a little an example of the lesson that we hear from Nectar Devotion. That is, on the platform of spontaneous devotion, regulations may be set aside if the spontaneous exhibition of love supersedes and the regulative part would interfere with the spontaneous love. So the spontaneous love is they wanted, because he's showing by example, Krishna, what is proper etiquette. The proper etiquette is, as indicated in the purport, we offer obeisances to parents or respected elder person. But that elder person may feel, as relation, and here, so much affection. Yasoda and Nanda didn't even give them the chance. They just rushed forward and embraced them strongly. When leaving the embrace of their parents, then they paid obeisances. That's a detail. But interesting is Krishna and Balaram, what were they feeling? Well, we see the signs of what they were feeling. They were just crying and their voices were choked up. Krishna. Crying. Choked up. He couldn't speak. They wanted to speak. They couldn't speak. He who is the all-powerful Supreme Lord couldn't speak. It's pretty amazing. It certainly makes sense that people shouldn't even start to look at 10th canto Bhagavatam before going through the first 9 cantos. How is this going to be understood? You take it in a worldly way. You don't have a proper understanding of Krishna. But this is Krishna for those that have understood that the progression of the topics of the Bhagavatam. This is our Lord. This is our Lord. He's, you know, the simple term is he's Bhakta Vatsala. Like that very, very wonderful section in the story of Maharaj Ambarish and Durvasa Muni. And when Durvasa Muni goes to Lord Vishnu, he says, I can't do anything to help you. Because without the consent of my devotee. Because the affection of Ambarish is, I can't do anything without the consent of my Lord. And the Lord is feeling in reciprocation, I can't do anything without the consent of my devotee. I'm bound by his love. Those who give their hearts fully to me, I give my heart fully to them. As they think of nothing but me, I think of nothing but them. He reciprocates. So what to speak then of the love that Nanda Maharaj and Mother Yashoda have for Krishna? Krishna feels that same love. Krishna reciprocates. And it's not cosmetic. It's not, oh, he loves me this way, so I'll behave in such and such way and he'll feel good. It's not like that. It's like the description that Queen Kunti gives in her prayers, where she's amazed that he who is feared by fear personified is afraid of the little stick in Mother Jasoda's hand. The little stick, not like a big whacking stick. It's a little lati, little skinny stick. And it'd be really easy. Oh, Krishna's just crying because, you know, something. It's just drama. He's just play acting. That's not the situation. Krishna was afraid of the little stick in Mother De Soto's hands, so much he was crying. That's bewildering. Because Kunti, because of her affection for Krishna, she sees him as super soul, you know, perambulatory super soul walking around amongst us. But Krishna doesn't, Mother Jasoda doesn't see like that. That's stated right in this verse. Excuse me, in the purport. Despite having heard the glories of the two lords of Dwarka, and despite seeing these opulences now before their eyes, Nanda and Jasoda looked upon them as if they were still their 8-year-old children. You know, simply, in the realm of Vraja Prema is where Madhurya eclipses Aishwarya. So they've heard, they've seen, and they can't feel it. They can only feel that these are our 2 8-year-old sons. Now, you know, the reflection of that, perhaps some of you have had this experience. You become a devotee and you visit your parents and they just see you as like you were when you weren't a devotee. You know, they're a little kid and they kind of talk that way and behave that way, and even you're not a little kid anymore. You know, teenagers, it drives them nuts when their parents want their kids to be, you know, like they were little, but they're not kids anymore. You know, mom and dad, grow up. You know, I'm grown up. So this is different. This what we experience here is a perverted reflection of there, the affection of parents towards their children, like to see them as little children, even though they're not little children anymore. This is different. This is transcendental affection. This is Vraja Prema. Krishna, who has, you know, thousands of queens and opulence, the opulence of Vaikuntha surrounding him, and all who can imagine when he came from Dwarka, what regalia? Well, we know from Chaitanya Charitamrita what the gopis thought about the regalia. They didn't like it. They didn't like it. They wanted to see Krishna in another way. They didn't like it. So Nanda and Jasoda, they can't even, you know, it's not within them, their ability to wrap their mind around the opulences of Krishna. They don't think just, so they're having them sit on their laps, embracing them with their arms. Who can imagine what they're feeling? Just like the Damodar Leela, Mother Jasoda does the same thing. Krishna comes, holds on to the rope, I want to be fed. Although he doesn't say it, she knows. She places Krishna on her lap. Face to face, such a beautiful, those paintings are really beautiful. She's looking in Krishna's eyes. Krishna's looking in her eyes. The motherly affection, imagine that scene between mother and child. She has her arms around Krishna's back. Krishna's smiling. What is Mother Jasoda feeling? It's pure bhakti. She's Shakti Tattva looking at Krishna. So she feels great happiness, which increases Krishna's happiness, which increases her happiness, which increases Krishna's happiness. And the crescendo keeps going. And then the Leela goes on. Here that so many years later, and they're feeling that same, because that's their affection. They can't. The Madhurya eclipses the Aishwarya. And if just going on, because I won't be here the next, you know, after this morning, but the next verse is Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes, they're practically stunned. As Krishna couldn't speak, they're in a position where they're like statues. I mean, that's not what they're feeling, but the ecstasy is such that they can't even, you know, properly detect the people that are with them because their attention is so absorbed. You can't even, can't comprehend the intensity of their feelings of love for darling Balaram and Krishna. And part of what has enhanced that is the separation, because we hear from our founder Acharya that separation strengthens the intensity of love so that when there is meeting, it's like there's an explosion. So that's what's happening. They're unable to control their faculties. They're not even trying to control their faculties. They're just overwhelmed with waves of love. Practically delirious from a worldly sense, but in a transcendental state of love for Krishna. And one last thing, and that is all glories to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. How does Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur know when he's just, you know, take them into the Vasudev, takes them into his tent, and all of these things, you know, what Krishna's feeling, what anticipating, you know, the mood, just as you read in the upcoming purports, what platform of Krishna consciousness was Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur? And without the association or the assistance of such exalted persons, you know, to literally take part in the pastimes, because how can you know? It's not creative writing. It's participation in the pastimes and then coming back to our plane and telling us this is some of the details that weren't written down by Vyasadeva. How intimate, how elevated, how compassionate to share all that. How fortunate we are to receive. And what's our eligibility to have that confidential understanding disclosed to us? The association with such great souls through the transcendental writings is the greatest of all fortunes and impetuses for ecstatic love. It's meant, sharing this is to help awaken that loving attraction for Krishna as these residents, the pure devotee, particularly the residents of Vrindavan, also the residents of Hastinapur and Mathura. How much love they have for Krishna. We have a long way to go. But hearing their quality of their love is an impetus for awakening further our love. Stimulations of her ecstatic love. Okay, we'll end. See if there's any questions or comments. Yes. Ragatmika, I just saw her hand. Do you have something? Okay, I didn't see your hand, sorry.
Thank you, Maharaj. we've heard the statement, separation makes the heart grow fonder.
Yeah.
And then we also know time deteriorates everything.
Yeah.
Now, I would guess that time deteriorating everything applies on the material plane.
Exactly.
But separation makes the heart grow fonder can only happen by meditation on the, yeah, you know, separated one or, yeah, fond. However, that statement isn't that come from the mundane sphere? Where did that come from? That, it's just a thought I'm having.
I got you. Well,
because even in the on the material plane, absence does not make the heart grow fonder when someone's really absorbed materially.
I'm trying to recall some verse in the Bhagavatam I was just reading. Give me a moment. Oh, yeah. Vritrasura. Vritrasura, after he captures Indra's club and bonks Airavata on the head and he falls back, blood coming out of his mouth, and Indra revives him because he knows how to do that. And he's standing there looking at looking at Vritrasura. There's a whole bunch of verses where Vritrasura says these really, chivalrous, blood-curdling, threatening things. Then the mood changes, and he says, but Indra, use that thunderbolt, and then you'll release me from my karma in this body, and then I can be situated with my Lord and with devotees such as Narada Muni, and goes on for some time about that. Then he speaks about our Lord, meaning, so the mood completely goes through changes. Our Lord is very kind. He never encourages us to want dharma, artha, and kama. He doesn't encourage us to do that. He's very kind. He doesn't. Of course, Indra is after his heavenly kingdom back. That's what the whole battle is about. Then he just starts talking to the Supreme Lord, just like Indra's not there anymore, and just meditating upon the Supreme Lord in like a trance-like utterance. And he speaks of separation. Like little birds in a nest that don't have their wings yet or feathers, and they're just calling out, awaiting for their mother to come and bring them some food, or a chaste wife whose husband is away, separation makes the heart grow fonder. So waiting for her husband's return to come back and satisfy her in all desires, or the calf who is simply waiting for the milking time, the cow comes back, her mother comes back, waiting for the opportunity to take milk again from the mother. So I am like that. So, he's comparing his transcendental attachment to the Supreme Lord to the mundane. So the mundane is there. It's a reflection of the transcendental. So the expression, as far as I know, it does come from the mundane. But after some time, commonly after some time, the attachment fades and one becomes attached to something else that's more proximate. Now, there are certainly cases where it doesn't fade. Just, people go crazy or it carries over into their next life. But yes, the expression comes from the mundane, but it's a reflection of the transcendental.
Rantaji was right in the sense that in the material world, it's not steady, as we find in spiritual. I was just thinking in World War II, the husband went off to fight the World War II, and then after some time, he's in the battlefield and he gets a letter. They used to call it a Dear John letter. And then it turns out the wife went with somebody else, so. Not so steady. My question was just, first of all, I want to thank you for confirming that I made the right decision when I was in Vrindavan recently. I carried back with me all the whole commentary of the whole Bhagavatam by Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur. And what you said about him, this made me feel, yes, it's confirmed. It was a good move to make. I've even had some experiences giving class recently where I had some questions, not only in the 10th canto, but even in the 6th canto, where something I didn't understand, why Prabhupada put something a certain way. And then when I read the commentary by Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, it gave me insight into that, and I was able to explain it. My question is that lately I've been thinking a lot about our incredible good fortune that the Krishna, Svayam Bhagavan Krishna, appears at the same as the same person as the Yuga Avatar to spread the Yuga Dharma. So it's like two in one. So in one sense, could we say that Madhya Soda, it wasn't imposed. It's that Gopal Krishna, maybe not 8 years old, but still, the cowherd boy Krishna is actually also there. On the other hand, it says Krishna Navalis Vrindavan, but that she was not, that she was, because the two are in one in this particular Kali Yuga, that she was actually detecting the presence, although the presentation was Yadunandana rather than Yasodanandana. Something about, maybe you can make some comment about this, the fact that they're both together. It's explained in Adi Lila, Chaitanya Charitamrita.
You succeeded in confusing me significantly. Because, it's one thing, the Yuga Avatar, when Swami Bhagavan Krishna appears, the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also appears as the Yuga Avatar, and then you switched over to, Krishna in Vrindavan and Yadunandana, or Nandanandana, Yasodanandana, and the son of the Yadu dynasty. So the two in one has got me baffled. In one sense, Krishna doesn't belong to anybody. The primary names, according to chapter two of Harinam Chintamani, primary and secondary names. The primary names indicate Krishna in his relationship with others, with his devotees, or the pastimes with those devotees. Those are primary names. So Yadunandana is a primary name. Krishna in his relationship with his devotees, as opposed to his position. But then there's a particular affection amongst the members of the Yadu dynasty with Krishna, and a particular different affection the members of Vrindavan and their relationship with Krishna, and a different kind of love according to that kind of affection. But the other thing, Swayam Bhagavan Krishna, when he appears, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also appears in the Kali Yuga immediately following as Krishna himself, giving that love of the residents of Vrindavan. That's what he's giving. Krishna himself giving that love, Braja Prem. Now, and along with Braja Prem, we're receiving through the pages of the Bhagavatam an understanding of the love of all kinds of people. Like, for example, the demigods that make prayers to Krishna while still in the womb of Devaki. I studied those prayers, and it's very appropriate. Or the prayers of the demigods to Lord Nrsimhadev. Their position projects the kind of prayer from their position. Their consciousness indicates the prayer that they give, or the prayer that they give indicates their consciousness. But they're not on the platform of, the residents of Mathura, the Yadu dynasty devotees. And the Yadu dynasty devotees are different than the residents of Russia. But there's still, it's one Krishna. There's different kinds of love. And so also, you know, the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, like Murari Gupta, there's Ram Bhakta, no problem. No problem, because, you know, Swayam Bhagavan Krishna becoming Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he includes everything. Within him is everything. That's Swayam Bhagavan Krishna. Within him is everything.
Yeah, well, I'm also a monotheist. Monotheist.
Monotheist.
Monotheist. I mean, of course, God is one. There's only one God, but these two aspects, I'm just thinking it had something to do with how natural it was for Krishna to be able to reciprocate with so many, like when he entered the wrestling arena, everyone saw him in a different way, because actually the both aspects of the Supreme Lord are there. The time, it's described the time for the Yuga avatar and the time for the, when Krishna would appear personally only once in 1,000 ages of Lord Brahma, that they coalesce, that they're together. So in that sense, two in one. And Krishna never leaves Vrindavan.
It sounds like you want to talk about this. When, next time you're scheduled to give class, just like, go for it.
I was just trying to ask a question.
Yeah. You were thinking that?
No, I believe it. Okay. I'm very satisfied the way you presented it. That reminded me of Dasami Tippani of Sanatana Goswami Pad. That in the spiritual relationship, he quote similar to Nectar Devotion, Chaitanya Chaitamita also has that verse, that Atrasthayi Bhavasya Prakta Sri Krishna Vishayarati. The object does not dictate what the object is. It is the devotee with the relationship perceive that. So,
yeah.
In Dwarka, when Mother Devaki or Devaki Nandan's mother, she was in a lamentation one time that Sanatana Goswami Pada explained that Lord Krishna just arrived there and says, "Oh, you are crying. What is the matter, mother?" I always wonder in Kurukshetra what scenery I have seen. It's overwhelming me since that time, that your relationship with that Nanda Maharaja's wife that I, you know, your father took you for some time and she gave so much affection, but your bond between her and you was so contagious, so strong. And the form that I perceived, it was affecting my heart, and it's still I'm not, I wish I could see that again and again. And I could not control my tears. So then Lord Krishna told to his mother, Devaki, that, oh, why didn't you just tell me? I can, to please you, I can manifest. And then he displayed, revealed that form in Dwarka. And then Mother Devaki, instead of loving, showing her parental mood, she bowed down to that form because of her opulence painted with her Vatsalya Bhava. So that form was adored later on by our acharyas. And so they said that Mother Yashoda's feeling, only Mother Yashoda knows. Unless she explained or somebody explained from her anger, Mother Devaki will never grasp that, because she sees as a worshipable object as this instead of son.
Anything else? Yes.
So, I understand very clearly from you, and also when I hear from Srila Prabhupada, there is only one Krishna.
Speak slower, please.
I understand very clearly from you, and when I hear from Srila Prabhupada, there is only one Krishna. But I get a little bit confused when okay, he goes out of Vrindavan,
He knows what?
No, he goes out of Vrindavan.
Well, it seems that he goes out of Vrindavan, yeah.
Yeah, when they say seems, then I get confused because
Krishna,
I know he stayed and he's everywhere, but...
He eternally resides in Vrindavan.
When he goes out, who is going out?
Vasudev Krishna goes out.
But then I see also like the bodhis from Vrindavan attached to that one outside.
Yeah, Vasudev Krishna is different than Swayam Bhagavan Krishna. Swayam Bhagavan Krishna eternally resides in Vrindavan.
By chance, I read a book that...
Can't what?
By chance, I read one small book that they were praying to, you know, him in Mathura Dwarka, you know, some people in Vrindavan, they were like, when are you going to come back? So it looks like he left, and then I get so confused. I think there's only one Krishna, but at the same time, he goes outside, and then he's not going outside.
Oh, okay. He goes outside, and he doesn't go outside, means he stays in Vrindavan. He doesn't go outside. He stays in Vrindavan as Swayam Bhagavan Krishna in the hearts of the residents. We discussed this yesterday. In the hearts of the residents of Braja. He's with them, and they're experiencing pastimes with him within their heart. Pastimes within him, or with him. They're experiencing in bhava stage. And so he doesn't go, and he does go. The contradiction, I mean, it's either one or zero, right? So it's got to be one or a zero. It can't be a one and a zero. For Krishna, it's both a one and a zero. He goes outside of Vrindavan as Vasudev Krishna. He stays as Swayam Bhagavan Krishna. Yeah. It's not a contradiction. It's an apparent contradiction, but it's not a contradiction. Well, let's do this one. You know, Krishna is all pervasive and localized. That's something you're more familiar with hearing. He's all pervasive and he's localized. Okay, so that's an apparent contradiction, but it's easy to understand because Krishna can expand himself. So he's localized and all pervasive. No problem. The resolution is his inconceivable transcendental potencies. It's described in Brahma Samhita, verse number 36, long purport, you can look it up, where there are several verses in a row where Jiva Goswami, the commentator in Sanskrit of Brahma Samhita, says the first verses, the first three verses of Brahma's prayers, the Govindam prayers, are describing Krishna's form, Krishna's abode, Krishna's form, Krishna's activities. Then Jiva Goswami says, a person who hears these verses may doubt, how is this possible? To explain how it's possible, Jiva Goswami says that Lord Brahma in the following four verses lays out the inconceivable potencies of Krishna. And if you can accept that Krishna has inconceivable potencies, then things that look like a contradiction are easy to understand. You know, sorry, Angani, yes, 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 he has inconceivable potencies. With his limbs, anything, and that's not normal limbs. It's with his inconceivable potencies, he can do anything with any of his limbs, for example, and other things. He can leave Vrindavan and not leave Vrindavan. He just exercises his inconceivable potencies. So exactly how he does that is inconceivable because it's inconceivable potencies, but through his potencies he does that. So things that appear to be contradictory or, well, just how can it be? Either he stays in Vrindavan or he leaves Vrindavan. Which is it? And I get confused when they say, you know, he leaves and he stays. But the simple resolution is it's inconceivable potencies. Now, then there's the particulars. But even if one doesn't know the particulars, it's not confusing. because he has inconceivable potencies. That's Krishna. We'll go to Bhagavat Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami. I'm becoming a Jiva Goswami fan. So in Bhagavat Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami says there's a very simple definition of Bhagavan is two things. He's a person, and he has inconceivable potencies. That's Bhagavan. And there's, you know, like gobs of pages or anuchets, texts, describing those two things. He's a person who's unlimited. We have a limited conception of what a person is. In fact, impersonalists think that imposing person on Brahman limits Brahman. That's their notion. Our notion is you're trying to limit Bhagavan by saying he can't be a person. Excuse me, but, you know, move aside. Because he is a person who has inconceivable potencies. Once that's established, all the other things become no problem. He can have wonderful pastimes, and he's just enjoying his unlimitedness and reciprocating with love with his devotees at the same time. No problem. You content now, for the moment? Microphone?
I was just wondering when, you know, sometimes they say he won't put even one step, you know, like out of the mouth, not even one.
He doesn't.
It's so drastic, you know.
He doesn't. It's the same question.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's the same answer. He doesn't.
Yeah, I know you think that. He's there, he was like that.
Inside of everything and outside of it. You know, I call it Upanishadic double talk. He's inside of everything and he's outside of everything. He's very near, he's very far, well, very far away as well.
Same idea.
But that's even just, you know, the Paramatma conception. Then you go to the Bhagavan conception. And it's, you know, just, you know, the expansiveness of Krishna is unlimited. So for him, it's not a problem to not take a step out of Vrindavan and take a step out of Vrindavan.
Yeah, I have to accommodate the Jnana Yoga part and the Bhakti Yoga part, because this is when I get confused, like, you know, like he was selling some kind of Jnana Yoga in Kurukshetra, you know, Vajavasis. And they were saying, like, you know, yogis, so this is when I get confused. I have to put both together for something that I can understand. Because he was saying, like, no, I'm with you, you know, everywhere. And then they were, you know, they were like, no, I mean, you're not yogis, you know, to get understand.
Yeah.
Something like that makes sense. But I have the idea now.
Okay, good. Let's end class. Srila Prabhupada ki.
Yeah. Yeah.